Chapter 21 A Dinner with the First Mother. Jen slept in the empty apprentice's quarters in the barracks, not wanting to go to his new room within the chambers of the Shalane, since he couldn't be sure if Dayson had completely vacated it yet. He wasn't in the humour for a meeting with the man he was replacing. No doubt Dayson had taken his dismissal as the gravest insult. Outside on the field, Captain Tolbrook drilled the apprentices and Jen drifted off to sleep to the sound of Tolbrook's deep voice barking orders. As usual, he slept poorly. Images of Regina's death and the sight of Raphael laying cold upon his bed surfaced in his dreams like corpses popping to the top of a still pool, and when he awoke he felt sad and out of sorts, not the mood in which to dine with the first mother of Rugarth. Evening drew close and he rose, collecting his black coat from the chair, noting the lump in the pocket. Fenner's favour. Jen shook his head. Chamberlain Herney had instructed him to return it quickly or cause offence. Now that he would be on duty at night and she in the day, he didn't know how he would manage a satisfactory visit. Returning a favour required more than just returning the object. A man was to do something special. After dreaming about Regina all afternoon, he had no heart to even try. Guilt ate at him, though Fenner had gone out of her way to help him feel welcome, and she deserved more than what he could give in return. Jen scrubbed his face in the basin of water on the table at his bedside and rebuckled his sword belt. Conversation in the hall signalled the return of the apprentices, and a surprised Gerund opened the door, followed by Volney. Both were sweaty and bedraggled, more than one bruise decorating bare torsos. "Jen," Gerund said, bowing. Volney was speechless. "Gerund, Volney, forgive my intrusion, I just needed a place to rest this afternoon." "It is an unexpected pleasure to see you, Jen," Volney finally said. "Can we see it?"
"See what?"
"The branding," Volney said excitedly. "Did it hurt? What does it look like?"
"Volney,"
Gerund interrupted. "What you ask is most improper, and I'm sure you don't think Jen will actually show you."
"Oh." Volney was crestfallen. "I suppose you're right."
Kimdan rounded the corner, confident and happy, despite being bruised more than either Gerund or Volney.
"Is that Jen?"
"It is,"
Volney confirmed.
"Well, what brings you back to us, Jen?"
Kimdan inquired, manner cocky.
"I thought protectors got quarters in the chambers of the Shalane. Were you denied the berth because of your rank?"
"Certainly not," Jen replied evenly. "I smell just fine. Much better than the three of you, anyway. I will take my quarters this evening." Gerund and Volney smiled. Kimdan rolled his eyes up into his head.
"And have you seen Miss Fairdale today?"
Kimdan asked smugly.
"Yes. I had the pleasure of her company for a brief time."
"And how was she?"
"She seemed to be frowning a bit more than usual and kept staring at some miserable excuse for a rose she got from somewhere." Kimdan somehow turned red even through his sunburn, and Jen successfully determined the source of Fenner's flower.
"Will you take dinner with us in the Commons?"
Gerund asked.
"I would like to eat with you, but I'm taking dinner with the First Mother this evening. I must be on my way."
"With the First Mother herself?" Volney said. "What an honour!"
Kimdan smirked and turned away. Jen started toward the door.
"Yes, with the First Mother herself. Take care. I will try to see you soon. Maybe Tolbrook will let me spar with you sometime."
"We'll be ready for you," Kimdan affirmed,
he and Volney stepping aside.
"I doubt it," Jen mumbled mostly to himself, walking out into the cooling night air.
Clouds gathered in the west, hinting at a brilliant sunset in store, but somewhere in the city something burned, a column of dark grey smoke billowing up into sky. A stiff breeze brought the smell of wood smoke with it, tinted with a breath of rain. Several people commented about it as he passed, and as he climbed the castle hill, the column of smoke thickened. Chamberlain Herney was waiting at the doors when he arrived.
"Good evening, Jen. How are your court manners coming along?"
"I will tell you after I dine with the First Mother."
"Just do what she does, and you'll be fine. I'm afraid, however, that she is late on some matter of pressing business. She bids you wait for her in the main hall until she can come to you."
"Very well."
The great hall was mostly empty when he entered it, orange-red light coming through the clear windows, colouring everything in fire. On the west-facing balcony, servants scrambled about to prepare the table and the meal. Rather than ascend, Jen took time to study the tapestries he had noticed earlier. A section of them outlining Aldredon McMere's life caught his attention. The first panel showed him as a youth, a strapping farm boy. All around him, the artisan depicted wildlife, for it was said that Aldredon was a friend to nature, and that the animals talked to him. The next showed the start of the First McKickian War, Uyumark and other horrors pouring into Lalmanar, sacking it and filling their arms with its treasures. Men, women, and children lay dead upon the ground, and Uyumark cut rings from fingers and purses from belts, while squabbling over which bodies to cook. The third showed Aldredan leaving his farm and joining as a soldier, even though his rank prohibited him from doing so. An eagle with a sword in its talons descended to him, and thus began the gradual rise of Aldredan McMere from farmhand to the king of a new nation, Rugoth. Jen turned as the door opened. The first mother entered, beautiful in a blue dress, but her eyes were tight with worry. Cadean, coming in behind her, appeared equally disturbed. She managed to smile at him despite her distress.
"Finding someone like yourself on the walls, I see?"
"I'm no Aldredon McMere, Your Grace," Jen returned, bowing. "If half the stories of him are true, then I doubt there will ever be another man quite like him."
"Perhaps not. But what endeared Aldredon to the people was the fact that he was so ordinary and plain, not given to device, dissembling, or manoeuvring as most nobles are."
The First Mother stood silently for a moment, as if waiting for something.
"Did Herne not teach you that it is custom on these occasions for the gentleman to extend his arm and escort the lady to the table?" she finally asked.
"He did, my lady, but I am not a gentleman. One of my station is to follow behind you."
"I told you I would take care of that, and I will. You must practice for when I do. Your arm, sir."
He complied and led the First Mother up the stairs, Cadean shadowing them closely. The meal was laid out on a stone table in the open air, attractively arranged fruits, meats, and slices of dark bread spread on a purple silk cloth. Crystal glasses filled with red wine accented the decorated white plates and silver utensils. Jen had never seen such a finely appointed table, save at the reception for Shatan, and he felt grateful for the simplicity of the fare. By most accounts, aristocracy ate rare things. The First Mother pulled him past the table and leaned on the balustrade overlooking the city. The steady west wind blew her hair about, and she quickly worked her blonde locks into a bun and secured it with a long silver pin. From their vantage point on the balcony, they could easily see the block of the city below where the fire raged, spreading slowly.
"I'd hoped for a calm evening," she commented. "I have a lot to ask you."
"What happened?"
"Reports are a little strange. This is the third time we've had a fire like this in as many months. Ilks work, but we can't quite pin down how it is done."
"The circumstances are unusual, then?"
"Yes," the First Mother replied, signalling for him to sit. "I'll tell you while we eat. I'm afraid this incident will curtail the time I allotted to spend with you."
"Perfectly understandable, m'lady.
But before we talk of the fire, I wanted to warn you to exercise a little caution. The Shalane told me about your repartee with Shatan this afternoon, including the bit about the street whore and wooden personality. Shatan will try to bait you into mistakes, and you must not return in kind. Despite how childish he can be, the Ulric wields a great deal of power and has many loyal friends. There are several rumours of plots on your life circulating, and at least two seem credible."
"I assure you I was more civil than he warranted. I will try, however, not to tempt fate any further."
"Tempt it? As far as Shatan is concerned, you've been poking fate with a sharp stick. I cannot ask you to act against your conscience, but realize that exchanging unpleasantries with Shatan only sours his disposition and can only hurt you. Understood?"
"Yes, m'lady.
But if Shatan doesn't warm to the idea of behaving more decently, I'm afraid there will always be winter between us. Frost will always hate the songbird and the blossom, as they say."
"And who says that?"
"It's a poem, actually. Recite it for me if you can."
Jen took a drink and leaned back.
"Frost will ever hate the blossom, set its hand against the flower. Seek to choke the songbird, tempt snow from raindrops in the shower. Fog will ever hate the sunshine, set its breath against the light, blind the keen-eyed traveller, cloud the blue-skied day into night. If such enemies in nature be as frost and flower, fog and sun, then lift your eyes and watch. Nature makes enemies for everyone.
Mirel nodded her appreciation.
Not a very cheering poem, but appropriate, perhaps. You let the ilk be Shirtan's enemy. It will be impossible to protect the Shalane from every indignity Shirtan will burden her with. It is enough that you keep her alive. So avoid Shirtan if you can.
As you wish.
Very well.
The First Mother sat quietly for several minutes, eating the meal and staring at the smoke plume. She was obviously upset. Jen noticed she didn't use her silverware, absently tearing away the bread with her fingers. The meat and fruit already sliced she also took by hand. He imitated her. The cooks obviously spent more time on the First Mother's food than they did on that served in the commons. The meat was tender and perfectly seasoned, the fruit bruiseless and at the peak of ripeness. After downing a slice of apple, her eyes fell on him again.
I wanted to tell you some news we just received from your homeland, though it may pain you to hear it. Should I continue?
Please, I've been anxious for any word.
Thorbrand Cairn is a clever one, I'm afraid. As you know, in late autumn, he secreted a sizable force of men in the centre of your country, in your town. By the time anyone found out, winter had struck, and nothing could be done save the spreading of news that Ogmyr had invaded. Come spring, King Fillingrail pulled a good portion of men off the northern line and sent them on the long march south to support Duke Norshwell's army. Once the king divided his forces, the Ogmyrian army of soldiers, hiding their numbers, struck the northern border, putting your countrymen to flight. The latest news is that the Ogmyrian force in the heart of your land simply withdrew, though to where, no one knows, their ruse completed. Tolnor has a long summer ahead of it, I'm sorry.
Thank you for telling me. I suspected as much.
Tell me more about the fires. Yes, as I said, there have been three of this kind. In each case, witnesses said there was an explosion of fire. This isn't someone lighting a fire with a torch or throwing a lantern into a building. One explosion was in the rafters of a church, another in the cellar of a popular inn. Today's was in a busy guild house. We suspect magic, but have no clues as to who is behind it. The people are terrified. More than I care to count have died, and the fire today is engulfing neighbouring buildings, residences for the poorer classes. You're thinking something. What is it?
Jen thought a few moments more. Mirel's description touched off something in what he had of Telmarin's memory.
Were animals found at any of the fires?
Dead ones?
I haven't heard. Why?
During the First Mekician War, there were brother magicians, one of Duum magic, the other of Min magic. They would use animals and fire against the Uyumark. The process is taxing and difficult. The brothers would capture an animal, a bird, for example. They would build an enormous fire, and as it burned, the Duum magician would capture its heat until the last ember winked out and somehow bind the collected heat to the bird. The Min magician would then control the bird, guiding it into the middle of an Uyumark camp. The Duum magician would release the binding, causing an explosion and great devastation. The process would exhaust both magicians for many hours, and during such a weakness, an Uyumark patrol stumbled upon the brothers and killed them, not knowing they were the perpetrators of the strange attacks. Of course, this kind of fornergy requires one magician from each discipline of magic who is powerful. They would probably work away from people and in the dark to hide the smoke from the bonfire that the spell requires. During the period of weakness afterward, they would be vulnerable and easy to capture.
I do remember a report from the church fire of a parishioner saying she saw a raven perched on the rafter, taking it for a bad omen and leaving. Aren't the animals burned with the fire or explosion?
No, Jen replied. The Duam magician has to protect them somehow to withstand the heat focused upon them by the binding. The impact of the blast will usually kill them, but when found they are unburned, unlike everything around them. It's just a theory, but one worth pursuing if none of the others are producing anything.
The First Mother rose. I must relate this to Regent Ogbith at once. It is somewhere to start, the first place we've had. He may wish to speak to you of it. Ethrys as well. Stay and enjoy your dinner. I promise I will invite you again. I am determined to have some conversation with you that doesn't relate to Shatan, my daughter, or killing.
Good evening, Your Grace, Jen said, rising and bowing as she hurried off. Cadean in tow.
Jen relaxed and ate slowly, watching the orange sky deepen to red and purple. The breeze whipped up as the sun fell, lending potency to the smell of smoke. Thanks to Samian, he knew a heavy storm would pass through an hour or so after dark, a welcome relief to those faced with the flames below, though the initial winds would exacerbate the spreading of the fire. Guessing it was close to the sixth watch, he passed through the great hall and descended into the antechamber of the Shalane to relieve Jaren. After his branding, Ethrys had told him several interesting things about the antechamber and the Shalane's chambers. The most interesting thing was about the walls in the Shalane's room.
"This secret is held even from the Shalane until her majority," Ethrys had explained, "and for good reason, as you will no doubt deduce. The walls not only show locations within and around Rugoth, but they can act as a portal to them as well. The brand upon you is the key you need, but touch the walls and speak the location and a portal will be opened. If a foe makes it past the outer guards and into the Shalane's inner sanctum, it is not your duty to fight. Anything that can win its way past the myriad of protections, both magical and mundane, and navigate that maze will likely be beyond your skill to defeat. In such an eventuality, you are to take her through the portal. When the lake is not frozen, take her to the Defender. If it is, take her to Renbury Cathedral on the other side of Mickmere. It is the home of the prelate, and has a fighting order of churchmen, the Eldafir, attached to it. Once the portal is passed through, it will be destroyed, so that nothing can follow.
Besides this, Jen learned that all of the statues in the antechamber were foe stones, creations from before the shattering that could detect anyone entering with evil intent and shout warning. Even more impressive, two of them could transform themselves into the image of the enemy and fight. The small pool at the centre of the room could heal wounds and cure poison, and behind a plant on either side of the bridge, a rune was inscribed that, when touched by someone bearing the Protector's brand, would send the bridge crashing into the abyss below. He entered the antechamber, finding the number of the Dark Guard there increased by the addition of Kimdan and Gerund. They stood stiffly at attention, one of the other Dark Guard masters standing opposite them to enforce discipline. Jaren, the Shalane, and Fenna stood at the entrance to the maze, and Jen crossed to them and genuflected.
"Welcome, Jen," Jaren said.
"Good evening," Jen replied.
"Are you to teach me the maze?"
"Yes," the Shalane answered. "And to say farewell to Miss Fairdale, who is done for the day. Goodbye, Fenna."
"Goodbye, milady," Fenna curtsied. "It is good to see you again, Jen. I hope you rested well."
She turned to Kimdan.
"Thank you for the rose, Kimdan. It is beautiful."
And then she left, a little too hurriedly by Jen's reckoning. Kimdan stood silent but grinning, fetching an angry stare from the Dark Guard across the room. The grin disappeared quickly. Inwardly, Jen groaned. Fenna had started a game he did not want to play, and the Shalane obviously had part in staging the first round.
"Let's begin, then," Jaren said, entering the maze. "It's large and tricky, so pay close attention."
Jen figured the size of the Shalane's maze double that of her mother's, requiring several minutes of confusing turns to get through. Traps, mundane and magical, usually both at the same time, greeted any wrong turn, and Jen's normally good memory was significantly motivated by the desire to avoid them. At the other side, they had him go through by himself while they tagged along to give warning should he choose amiss. Luckily, he learned the maze quickly, and Jaren applied a hearty slap on the back.
"Took Dacen 4 days to get it straight," he disparaged before leaving. "I'll see you in the morning."
Eldwina, Fenna's nocturnal counterpart, arrived next. Eldwina was older than Fenna and had a round, puffy face with short, blonde hair. Jen noticed she was pregnant. Her eyes and mouth bespoke a lifetime of fuss and worry.
"Where's Dacen?" she inquired,
clearly startled.
"My mother dismissed him and named Jen my protector. Jen, this is Lady Eldwina Mores." "Eldwina, Jen,"
"How do you do?" Jen said.
Alduina gaped in shock and ignored Jen's greeting.
"Your mother dismissed Dayson. Was this today? I always miss everything when I go home. How could she dismiss Dayson? He was so beautiful." "You're married, Alduina. Well, you're the Shalane, and you thought he was beautiful too." "Come, Jen," the Shalane said, turning away. "Your quarters are two down from my door. The first room is Jaren's. He usually doesn't sleep there, however." "Have you seen Dayson, Jen?" Alduina asked him.
"Yes, of course."
"Gorgeous man, wouldn't you say?"
"I will leave that judgment to you ladies."
"Oh, it is a shame," Alduina bemoaned. "Dayson was a good one, he was. Made me laugh like my poor Robbie never could. Of course, Robbie makes me laugh just at him, though not with him. I don't suppose you're any good at cards, are you?"
"Too good for the both of you, I fear," Jen said flatly. The Shalane stopped with Alduina, the latter regarding Jen intently for several moments, eyes narrow.
"Is he joking, m'lady?" she asked. "I don't think Jen jokes with anyone, Alduina. Come, let's go inside and not bore Jen with further talk of Dayson. We'll find our own entertainments. Good night, Jen."
"Good night, Shalane. Lady Morris."
They went inside without further comment, for which Jen was grateful. After such busy days, he felt in great need of several hours of unbroken solitude. If he could get through the rest of the day without hearing the names Dayson or Kimdan, he would count himself blessed.